Awesome.
Hey, everybody. I'm Bill. That's Lloyd. Welcome back to StadiaCast. Lloyd, how you been doing, man?
Dude, it feels like it's been a billion years since we last talked. Although we did talk recently for a different show, but this is like the first time we've talked Stadia in a while. It's been good, man. The holidays, we're back in lockdown world here in Winnipeg. We're like, technically, we're not locked down, but the smart people are reducing their contacts because things are burning here like crazy. So I didn't leave the house from like December 20th all the way to like the 5th or 6th of January. Like, I literally didn't step outside except to pick up groceries once, which they put into my trunk. I don't even have to get out of the car, and to drop a package off at the in-laws. And that's the only time I've left the house. The rest of the time I was playing video games. So it was a pretty awesome holiday break, regardless of all the other crazy real world stuff that is going on.
Yeah, I suspected as much as I saw on Twitter. You were like, just finish this game, just finish that game. And I was like, man, he's gonna have a lot to talk about when we get back. Before we get to that, just so everybody knows who's either listening to this on a podcast player or watching this over on our YouTube channel, which is nerdnest.tv, we do record this show live every, well, we just got back from a break, but most of the time, Sundays at 10 a.m. U.S. Eastern time. So make sure you head on over to the YouTube channel and subscribe and turn on notifications so that you can be here for the shows as well, because we always have fun talking to people in chat about all of that stuff. And while we are talking, I want people in chat, and if you're watching this after the fact, to let us know either in chat or in the comments, what games have you been playing over the holidays while Lloyd and I have not been really creating all that much content. Lloyd, what have you been playing?
I've been playing a lot, dude. I had started a lot of games last year, 2021, but didn't finish them because it was just like the cadence for all these big titles was like Tuesday the 7th, play Far Cry 6, and then a week later play blah, 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 blah. And that's kind of how the second half of the year went for me on Stadia. So I beat six titles on Google Stadia over the break. Five titles on Google Stadia over the break. I completed like eight games over that break, which was really nice to kind of get things beaten and out of the backlog queue. But let's talk about some of the games. Far Cry 6, man, I finally completed the main story. I haven't touched any more of the DLC. The main story was amazing. I was really close to the end. I just had, I think, three or four missions that I had to do to complete all of the various faction stuff to then do the big final battle. And then you do the big final battle, and it was pretty interesting. I didn't expect all the stuff that happened to happen. Far Cry 6 was just a triumph on Stadia. The game played well. I know there's people that are like, oh, it's not 60 frames a second, which I agree is disappointing. Hopefully that patch will come. But loading from one part of the fake world to the other part of the fake world is super fast. The going from base to base, flying, doing all the stuff that you can do in the game. It was really, really nice playing it on Stadia. And of course, the multiplayer stuff that Bill and I did, having the Stream Connect, having a weird outside of the main storyline kind of story mode, or I guess multiplayer mode, was a lot of fun. So I really loved Far Cry 6. And one thing I didn't do is I didn't do the special mission that's been put into the game with Machete is in the game. And you can actually do a mission with the actual character that played Machete in the movies. What was it? Danny Trejo, right? I think that's his name.
Wait,
I think his first name is Danny.
Oh, okay. I was like, there's Danny a Far Trejo? Cry movie? Trejo.
No. In the game, they added a mission with Danny. I think it's Danny
Trejo.
And I still have to go and do that. I totally forgot to do it after I beat the game. So I need to go and do that and then get into some of the multiplayer some of the DLC stuff, because they're going to be adding a lot more DLC to Far Cry 6 as the months tick in.
Yeah, I have to say one of my favorite experiences from gaming last year was that multiplayer stream where you and I, we did that Jurassic Park thing where we had to We had to, if you guys haven't played this, it's outside of the main story and you got to find somebody to play it with. It's so cool. You have to like steal some kind of nuclear device, whatever. And that thing has to be kept cool. It's stored in a fake dinosaur world where there's like not dinosaurs, but like big statues of dinosaurs and stuff. It's like some kind of theme park. And you have to like go in, steal it, and come back out. You have to stay in the shade or keep it in water in order to keep it cool. And so Lloyd and I were playing this, and he had to go through and pick everybody off while I'm holding on to this device. And I'm like, we got to keep it cool. We got to get to the next water. And Lloyd's like, there's water over here. I don't know where you're looking. Where is it? And it was just so intense and fun. And we need more of those experiences. I know, I think there's like three more of those in the game, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong about that. And Lloyd and I said we were going to go back and do it, never got around to it because we're just so busy, but it's really cool. And if you haven't tried that out, you guys have to try that out.
Yeah. And one thing that I wish I would have known is I was waiting to beat the game because I kind of didn't want to have the game over. So I do that a lot of times. I'll get really close to the end of a story and then I'll be like, well, I don't want to beat it yet. And I'll do kind of like all the side quest stuff. And a lot of times I don't get back to the main story, which thankfully I did in this case. I wish I would have beat the story earlier because after you beat the story, that mode that Bill was talking about, where you have to do the fountain and key things cool and all that stuff, that is, there's a new mode where every day, I think, a different part of the island will be retaken by the forces, and you have to go and do a bunch of challenges there, including oftentimes a challenge to do one of the multiplayer things. So you can do it multiplayer or you can do it single player. And when you do all those challenges, you get rewarded with the actual paper money currency that you get from doing that in multiplayer. But you get a lot of it. And there's a lot of weapons and things that you can buy with that paper money currency, not the coin currency. And I was like, it's always so hard to get this paper money. I'm never going to get any of these items. And then as soon as I beat the game, I go to talk to the girl and she's like, yeah, do this, this, and this. And it's like, do this, get 500 paper money. Do this, get 600 paper money. Do this, get 1,200 paper money, which I think the like over 2,000 that I would get by beating that is more than I had in the whole like 80, 90 hours of playing the main game. So I'm like, ah, damn, I wish I would have known that. So that's my only disappointment with the game. The game from start to finish was crazy awesome. Giancarlo he's a great actor. And even though some of the video capture to in-game model kind of looked a little bit janky at sometimes with some of the animation, it was pretty fantastic playing through that game. So yeah, Far Cry 6 was just a triumph from start to finish.
I'm gonna let you go through, like, we'll talk about each one of your games because you played a lot of them. I just played Dragon Quest 11 on Stadia, and I'll talk about that after you're done. Life is Strange True Colors, you finished that game. Obviously, really hard to talk about that game without spoiling things. Don't worry, we're not going to spoil anything, everybody. Final thoughts on that game?
It's great. I love the Life is Strange series. They always deal with very heavy topics like loss or abuse or addiction or other things like that, stuff that rings true to a lot of people out there, maybe not in the same ways as those characters. The acting between all of the characters in the game was just so good, and it was great. There's the prelogue that came after the game. So you had your five chapters at launch, and then they had the prelogue, which focuses on another character that is in the game world that you interact with, but it's kind of a little bit more of her story. I haven't played through that yet. Apparently it's like another 3 hours. I'm gonna dip into that over the next little bit. But then we also have to look forward to Life is Strange 1 and 2 coming out. I believe in March now, I think, is the release date, or maybe it's February. So those will be coming to Stadia as well. So I'm sure a lot of people will want to play through the whole trilogy. But the games are all standalone, and True Colors was just it was a really great story about emotional IQ, we'll say. Reading emotions from people and then using it to either help or hinder them And it was a lot of fun to go through that. Plus the world of Haven, Haven, Colorado is just this little city that I want to live in. Like, I want to go there. I want to live in a loft above a bar. Like everything in the game was just so amazing. I love it. I love it to death. And I was super happy to play through all of it on Google Stadia.
Yeah, that game is one that I definitely, a lot of times I will jump into a game, I'll play it, I'll be like, okay, that was really cool, and I never really get back to it. That one I went back to, I don't know, like 3 or 4 times, so it's definitely a really good game, and I want to play more of it. I want to see where that story goes. You're right about the acting. The acting is absolutely fantastic. Those voice actors, they should... I don't know if they won awards at the Game Awards, but I feel like they should have, because they really, really did a great job with that. And the animators, the people who were in charge of like their faces and stuff, it was really great. Everything about that game is compelling. It sometimes I'll be like, okay, I want to play this game, but it's so heavy that I don't know if I want to play it right now. I want to just play something light and stupid. And so I ended up playing some multiplayer shooter or something where I can turn off my brain and just run around shooting things. But you also need to have games that have that heaviness to them. And I need to get back to it because it's really, really good. Assassin's Creed Valhalla, I know that you've been playing that. So I had thought that you'd already completely finished that, but you hadn't.
No, the main story, to beat the main story, you basically have to assassinate all of the Order people, and you have to take over all of the areas of the map. So there was a section of the map that I hadn't taken over. So I did that, and I beat the game, but there's still one person that I have to kill. So apparently there's a second ending to the game, which I haven't done yet. But to do that, you basically have to do like all of the side quests in the game. So I'm like, you know what? I'm happy beating the game right now, how I beat it. And once like the new DLC comes out, the Ragnarok DLC comes out, I'm going to get back into the game, and then maybe I will be able to beat that last mission to kill the final Order person that is at the top of the food chain kind of thing. So really great game, about 100 hours into Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which is ridiculous, but I've been playing it for the better part of a year. So that's not a crazy amount, but yeah, I love it. I love Assassin's Creed games, and Valhalla is my favorite of all of them.
That's the kind of thing with these games. Like, people are always... I saw somebody tweet this the other day. They said something about 500 hours. A game being 500 hours is not a selling point. And that's how I feel. And it's funny because I'm playing Dragon Quest XI, which is, you know, a really long game. But it's also super railroady. It's like very on a path. And, you know, a game like Assassin's Creed... you go wherever you feel like, you do whatever you want, and I get that analysis paralysis, and I'm just like, I load up the game, and I say, I can't make a decision on what to do, I'm just going to go play something else. Sometimes I wish that these open-world games like Far Cry 6 and Assassin's Creed, that they had like a mode that I could turn on where there was a person that would just say, hey, dummy, go do this now. Just have an NPC... that just tells me what to do, because the ability for me to go wherever I feel like turns me away from the game, which is, it's crazy because my favorite game of all time is an open world game where I could go wherever I want and do whatever I want in whatever order I want.
Right.
But these other ones, they're just too big for me, I think. I don't know.
So you're saying every game needs a Cortana to kind of say, hey, yes. Chief, why don't you go take over this thing over here?
Exactly. Well, yeah, because at the end of last year, I finished Halo, and I loved every minute of it. And I was like, I was doing a lot of the open world stuff, but I had Cortana there Weapon is her name in this game. right. She was constantly saying, hey, we should go do this thing. And I was like, oh, you know what? You're probably right. Let me go do that thing. I could go over here and get this collectibles so that I can wear a different outfit in PvP or whatever, or I can just finish, like, go on with the story. And I don't think I would have finished Halo Infinite if I didn't have that NPC to push me forward, to keep saying, hey, go do this thing. And that's what I need. that games like Far Cry 6 and Assassin's Creed Valhalla don't give me.
Right.
You've been playing Dragon's Dawn of New Riders. I think that's a pro game this month as well, isn't it?
It is, and that's why I played through it. I'm not going to spend too much time on Dragons or my next game just because they were smaller experiences. I love the How to Train a Dragon movies. It was a family favorite. We used to watch all those movies all the time with the kids. So when we got Dragons as a pro title, immediately jumped into it and played through it, not with my kids because it's a single-player game, but with my kids watching, and played through the whole game. It's about 6 hours from start to finish. I think I took 8 hours because a lot of time over the holidays and stuff, or over the last little bit, I'd be like, oh, I have to go do something. So I'd put my controller down and then I'd come back and I'd be staring at the Stadia boot screen saying your game was closed because of inactivity. So I did that a lot. So I think it took me around 6 hours to complete. It is a very short RPG. It's an action RPG. It reminds me a lot of games like Oceanhorn. Or Skylanders, very much in that kind of graphic style, and the things that you do are kind of the same. It was a heck of a lot of fun. Not the most amazing game that I've played this year, but it was fun to get through and play through it and get all the achievements in like six-ish hours or so. It was a fun game, really good for kids, a little simplistic for the adults, but if you are playing with kids and either the kids are controlling or you're controlling, the kids are watching, I think it's a fun experience for the whole family.
Yeah, that definitely sounds interesting. Not something I'm interested in for me, but I will say I did love those movies. Those movies are great. And like the TV show, like my wife and my son, they watched all of the TV shows when they came out, and we went to the movies to see the movies. Those were really good movies. What about Kimono Heroes? I haven't looked at that at all. I claimed it the other day, and I was like, I need to play this, and I never got around to it because I was playing Dragon Quest instead.
Yeah, it's a up to four-player platformer. It's really short. It takes about 2 hours to get through from start to finish. There's a bunch of like weird achievements to do. You get achievements for beating it with all the main characters, stuff like that. It is a very simplistic kind of like Super Nintendo styled platformer. It was a lot of fun. Not like mind blowing. It wasn't Celeste in like difficulty or anything like that. It was a very simple play from start to finish. It has like a weird thing in the middle where I died, but I didn't. And I'm like, what's happening? And then I reload an earlier level, like level 1-2, and all of the palette is all messed up. And I'm like, did the game crash? No, that was meant to happen in the game.
I hate it when they do that. That makes you feel like a moron. You're like, what? Like, I don't like it when games put you in a situation where you can't win because, like, I've plenty of times I've played a game and I've like gotten killed by a boss and I immediately reload and I'm like, all right, I'm going to try that again. And I keep banging my head against that wall. No, I was supposed to die against that boss. It's so frustrating when that kind of thing happens. And also when games do things, I know what the developers they're doing. They're like, oh, this is really going to surprise the player. There's good surprises and there's bad surprises. And it sounds like Kimono Heroes was giving you a bad surprise.
Not really a bad surprise, more of a confusing surprise. I think the thing that after I beat the game, I was just like, huh. It's a 2 hour title. From start to finish, took me about 2 hours. And I essentially played through the game twice because you get to like level 4-4, you beat the boss, but you don't beat the boss. And you go back to world 1-2, and then you go through almost the whole entire game again as you have to play it again to get to the boss and truly kill the boss. So I'm like, that's kind of cheap. I'm playing through the same level, but there's differences and things. It's not like you're basically just going back to world 1-1 and going through the whole thing again. But it was fun. This is a game that I'd love to play with the whole family, but I ended up just soloing it because I had some free time and was like, oh, I heard this one's only 2 hours. Let's jump into it. And did that, beat it in one play. And I'm like, okay, I'm glad I played that. I'm probably not going to go through it again with all the other characters.
All right. And then Chorus. You played Chorus, which I noticed that you spelled it Corvus.
Yeah, I have to, even though because that's what's on the screen, the title screen, and I know it annoys people, so I have to do that whenever I can. So yeah, I'm playing through Chorus on Stadia. I had previously played it on the PC version, streaming through GeForce Now, and also tried it on my PC. That did not go well, so my PC's not up to snuff to play this game at any good resolution or frame rate. It's a fun title. I got about halfway through the game on my PC. I'm up close to there on the Stadia version as well. It plays really well on Stadia, but there are frequent graphical glitches. Things like you're flying by a huge asteroid that is like the size of the moon, but it's an asteroid, so it's long and has crevices and things like that. And textures keep dropping down to kind of like they're low res, like far away asteroid textures keep appearing on asteroids that are near you. So it, to me, stuff like pop in and stuff like that generally doesn't bother me for the most part. But just seeing those textures kind of go like really crisp, like looking at actual rock to looking at gray goo that's been smeared with Vaseline. And then it's like really clear Vaseline, really clear Vaseline. And then you're past that big asteroid. So I think the developers have a little bit of work to get this version up to the level of the other versions. But I really love Chorus. I want to complete the game just to unlock all the powers and see kind of where this story goes, because I really do love the world. It'll be interesting to see if anything else comes from Chorus. Are we going to get like a single player RPG based in the world that you're not flying in a ship, but you're actually on feet? I doubt it. But it is weird to play a game where you never get out of your ship, except for cutscenes, and you can't control yourself when you're out of your ship and stuff like that. So yeah, I'm really enjoying Chorus. Graphical problems aside, on Stadia it looks and performs decent, other than the weird texture pop in and not frequent, but the odd time things would just freeze. But yeah, it plays well, it looks good, and I'm excited about getting through the rest of the game and completing that one off.
Do you think that the issues that you're having with Chorus are an issue with like the developer hasn't spent enough time with it, or do you think it's a more along the lines of the hardware just can't do what's being asked of it?
The hardware obviously is good. Stadia's blades are really fast, but a lot of developers are looking at the investments. Do I want to spend a month getting this version being buttery smooth when I'm going to sell X number of copies, or do I want to put that time into to this other platform where I've sold, I don't know, 90% more games or 90 times more games on that platform? Do I want to make that one look better first? So I think that's kind of what happened with Chorus. I think the Stadia version was not left to the end, but was just maybe not spent the similar amount of times than the other platforms, which would make sense. If you're running a business, you're not throwing bad money after bad money. You want to spend your time in a way that will have a return on investment. So I hope that over time the game will get patched. It will perform better. The gameplay itself is great. It's just these weird graphical things where textures are popping in and out. Like it's doing like the level of detail stuff. So an asteroid that is a kilometer away, it doesn't have the same number of polygons as an asteroid that's right beside you, and the textures are different. And it seems like that is what's happening when you're flying by these huge asteroids. They just keep dipping out and in of the LOD controls to make it drop down to whatever smaller resolution texture or object thing. Maybe it's a simple fix for them, or maybe it is being done because of performance issues and they need to work a little bit more on their engine. Not really sure, but I'm going to play through it regardless with those things or not.
So earlier I talked about the idea that I want mindless shooters, like mindless games that I can play. How would you feel about a Chorus multiplayer arena where like you are just dogfighting? Like I would play Chorus multiplayer arena nonsense 1,000 times a day over playing the story itself, because I found the story to be kind of boring for me.
Sure.
If you enjoyed the story, that's fine. And I'm not talking to Lloyd, I'm talking to everybody. But for me, I was kind of bored when I was playing it. I would love to just get in and do combat after combat after combat. Would you be interested in a multiplayer arena thing for Chorus?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the name of the game I played on PlayStation VR, which was basically just multiplayer dogfighting. And I put 80 hours, 60 hours into that with a VR helmet on my head, just flying around shooting people. It's so much fun. And I think Chorus is a really good engine. The one thing that would be kind of weird is that power to kind of teleport behind ships, you'd kind of have to disable that for multiplayer stuff, I think. So some of her powers might not be as usable. But if you're playing like the other ships in the universe and things like that, would bring me back to some of the old like DOS games that I used to play where you choose your class of ship and then fly around and shoot people. I think it would be a fantastic multiplayer game.
All right. So Lloyd played a billion games over vacation. I played very few games over vacation. One of those games that I played was Dragon Quest XI. It was funny. I was like, I feel like playing something. And so I just picked up my Stadia controller and turned on my Shield TV Pro. And I started looking through and I was like, what am I going to play? And I loaded up Doom Eternal and then I closed it. I don't feel like playing that. And then I loaded up this game and I closed it. I don't feel like playing that. And I went down the list, the ridiculously long horizontal list at the bottom of the at the bottom of the screen, which is, please fix that, Stadia, so it's not one long list. But I went through that list and I came across a bunch of games. I kept trying them, shutting them down after they load, essentially. And then I loaded up Dragon Quest XI. And when I opened it up, I saw I haven't played this since July. And part of me said, okay, dummy, you're going to have to relearn how to play the game. But it's a turn-based game, so you'll probably be okay. And so I ended up loading it. And I have to say, the thing that I forgot about this that's so cool is when you load up your old save, they do this whole thing where they're like, hey, this is all of the things that happened so far. We're giving you the crib notes of what has happened so far so that you can remember. And so I read through that stuff while the game was loading. I was like, oh, yeah, that did happen. Oh, yep, I remember that too. Okay, I'm all caught up on the story. And then I started playing again. And I have to say, I had forgotten how amazing the art direction is. The voice acting is some of the best voice acting that I've experienced in a game. And obviously the battle system is fantastic because it's Dragon Quest. It's super old school JRPG. I'm having a blast with it and I'm really, really enjoying playing it again. So nice. that's the game that I've been playing. And if you started playing it but fell off because something else distracted you, like yours truly, then give yourself another shot at it because it does all of those things that I think that we as adults, especially adults with very short attention spans and very short memories, need in order to get back to those games that we leave behind. Because I was afraid what was going to happen is I would start the game and be like, I don't know what's going on. I have to start from scratch. And then that game is essentially dead to me because I don't want to start all over, which is what always happens to me. So I really have been enjoying Dragon Quest XI again.
Yeah, it's a fantastic title. One of my favorite parts of Dragon Quest XI was kind of grinding for sort of the end game and watching like hockey games or whatever on TV and just playing, because I played it like on a device that wasn't my TV while watching TV. And it's basically you can just hold down a button and just go through these like big slime battles and just farm the XP. I love games like that where you can play them without really playing them, but then you can play them to play them. They have the kind of different gameplay styles built into it. Dragon Quest XI is fantastic. I love that game from start to finish. So good game to play through for sure.
Yeah, and another thing, it's not all roses and ice cream. I don't know if that's a thing. I will say this. There's a lot of, it's a JRPG, so there's a lot of downtime where you're like, okay, I hit the button and now it's got to put the text on the screen while I wait for the text to come on the screen. And I know that that's like a leftover from it being a JRPG and the fact that Japanese characters take up like four characters to tell the same thing that is like three paragraphs in English. And so that wait is longer in English than it is in Japanese, but it's just like, it's got a, it, it is super traditional JRPG, like super traditional. And if that's going to turn you away, then don't pick this game up. But if you like traditional JRPGs, you're going to like Dragon Quest XI. It's fantastic. And a really, really long game as well.
Definitely. Yeah, it is a very long game. You can get through it. If you don't want to defeat all the optional bosses and things like that, you can get through it in a decent amount of time. But yeah, if you want to do everything that there is to be done in that game, you're probably playing 150 hours, if not more. Like, there's a lot of grinding to be done to do some of those optional battles. But fantastic title from start to finish, just like you said, Bill.
All right, let's move on to the news. We have this week on Stadia, which I'm sure a lot of people who are watching this have already seen this stuff, but that's okay. It's interesting anyway. So let me remember how to bring that up. Here we go. So first off, Super Animal Royale is now on Stadia. I tweeted out that I'm bad at most games. I am a special kind of bad at this game. When I saw it, I was like, this is going to be so cool. I'm really, really going to enjoy playing this game. It's a battle royale game where you are these cute little animals, and it's a top-down twin-stick shooter-style game. Mm-hmm. And every time that I've played it, I have gotten killed almost instantaneously. I figured it's a twin-stick shooter. I've played a billion twin-stick shooters. Apparently, all of the twin-stick shooter experience that I have has netted me zero ability to play this game in any kind of competitive way. Have you played this game at all?
Yeah, about the same as you. I jumped in. I'm like, this should be easy. I'm good at battle royale games. I'm good at dual stick shooters. Let's land over here. Oh, I died. Okay, that's weird. Let's do it again. Oh, I died. All right. Maybe I need to spend some more time figuring out how this game works. It's a lot of fun. If you like battle royale games, this is kind of an easy introduction to battle royale games. You don't have to work with a 3D camera. You don't have to do anything like that. But it is just as brutal, where you land and then people see that you're over there and you obviously have no weapons. So they come at you with all the major superpowered weapons and then you die, and you leave a nice little tombstone in your wake and then spawn again. A lot of fun, a game that I need to spend a little more time with, because I do want to get a win. I'd love to get a win at least once on it, but I've only played maybe 5 matches, so I haven't given myself enough of a chance to get that elusive win.
Yeah. They also mentioned the pro titles that are coming there that came out this month. There's Darksiders 3, Bloodstained, Shantae's Risky's Revenge, Darkside Detective, Fumble in the Dark, and of course the Dragon game that we talked about. Of the ones that we didn't talk about, which one do you say is the one that is probably the one that you are most interested in?
That's really tough. This is a really good pro year, pro month rather. Darksiders 3 is fantastic. But I would say Bloodstained. If you haven't tried that, it is a really, really good Metroidvania game. And I think everybody needs to at least experience this game from start to finish at least once.
Yeah, that's definitely a really, really good game. I am most interested, and this is, you know, my bias leaking in here, in Darksiders, because I've never played it. Bloodstained I've already played, so for me, the one that I'm most interested in is Darksiders. I think that Bloodstained is probably going to be the most popular of the group, though. And people in chat, please feel free, let us know what you think about the pro lists for, I was going to say Monday, I mean to say January.
Right.
Been a long time since we've done this. Let's see, anything else in here? Somebody in chat earlier was asking if you played the DLC for Assassin's Creed where you go to other countries.
Yeah, all the DLCs kind of takes you to different places, Paris and some other, Ireland and some other places. I've done very little of the first DLC, and basically last night I played a little bit of Assassin's Creed and I got right to the place that I need to be to start that DLC, and then I hit save and said, okay, I'm going to save this for another time. So that's on the docket for some point, sometime in the near future. I want to play through all of the DLC that is in the game, in prep for Dawn of Ragnarok, which will be coming. When is that coming? Like July or something.
I can't remember. It doesn't say on screen here.
I can't remember the release date or the release date rumors for it, but yeah, whenever Dawn of Ragnarok comes out, that's going to be like a $50 expansion to the game, and it's like another like 40-hour story plus a bunch of other stuff. I'm going to want to have all that content beat by the time that that game comes out, or that expansion comes out, rather.
Yeah, and it says, I mean, it says here, I don't know how true this is, but they say it's the most ambitious expansion in franchise history. They say complete a legendary Viking saga and save your son in the face of the god's doom. Sounds super, super cool.
Yeah.
It upsets me that I'll probably never play this cool DLC because I can't be bothered to make a decision in the game and play the stuff that's already there, which is right. Too bad. And it's like, I know how good the game is because I've played it. I just can't get over that. That hump for me, like, it's just, it bugs the heck out of me that I can't get there. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing that they said in the This Week on Stadia is that our community manager Grace, she left the Stadia team. She's still working at Google. She went over to work at another thing, but if you aren't seeing her as much on like the subreddit or stuff like that, that's the reason why. And Grace was always awesome. And, you know, wish her the best of luck wherever it is that she is working at Google. I don't remember where it is, but it seemed interesting.
Yeah, 100%. Grace, you were fantastic for the community and for us in particular. You're quick to answer questions and things. Appreciate all the time that you spent kind of pointing this community in a general direction, because I know community management is a lot like herding cats sometimes. you did a good job. Enjoy your community manager retirement, but now you're doing some other cool stuff, so good on you, Grace, and hopefully you can pop in from time to time. We'd love to see your name pop into chat every once in a while.
Yeah, and she streams on Twitch as well, so make sure you follow her on Twitch. I forget what it is. It's something about avocados. I never remember, but she's a fun streamer as well. Speaking of streaming, since this is streaming, Samsung has announced their gaming hub where you can stream your games to their TVs without the need for a Shield TV, without the need for a Google TV, without the need for a Chromecast or anything hooked up to your TV at all. Now, Samsung are not the first ones to do this, and they won't be the last. In fact, we've got another TV manufacturer that talked about this that we'll mention in a little bit. I think LG was the first ones to do this. Am I right with that, Lloyd?
LG had the apps, the Stadia app on it. I know Sony TVs back in the day, you could play PlayStation Now from them, but it was very specific to only a couple Sony TV models. So this has happened in the past, but this seems like a huge change from Samsung. Instead of doing, like, I'm going to let my bias go a little bit. I'm an iPhone user, and I've seen a lot of stuff, really amazing stuff on iPhone. And then Samsung would come out with a phone, and even better, Apple would announce something. Samsung would say, that's stupid. We would never do that. And the next Samsung phone is exactly the same as Apple. So this
you're gonna get smoked in the chat.
So which is a valid way to conduct business. I'm not gonna say Samsung is bad at what they do, but it seems like they're always following kind of what other people in the market are doing, except for their foldable phones and things like that. I'm sure that is new. But then they come and do this, which is like, instead of launching their own service to compete with every other service, which is what Samsung does, instead of using this great app, they create an app that is very similar, and they call it Samsung Blah. This isn't really competing against other manufacturers. This is something entirely new, and I think in a turn of play, every other manufacturer is going to kind of do something very similar to what Samsung is doing. So what this gaming hub is a way for you to show all the different streaming services that you have, all the games that you have, various other games that you can play. And right on this main screenshot that they put out, there's a GeForce Now icon, a Stadia icon, a Utomic icon, YouTube videos, recently played games are right at the top, sponsored content, which shows like one of the Stadia, This Week in Stadia images, and then popular games below. I have a feeling that this could be huge. And it's interesting to see Samsung kind of take this upon themselves to do, instead of kind of adjusting to what other people in the market are already doing. I found that very, very interesting. And I want to see kind of if LG will do something like this, if TCL, if Roku, if all the other smart TV manufacturers do something similar. Because to me, it totally makes sense. And you know, Samsung is probably getting a chunk of money every month. If someone plays a GeForce Now or a Stadia app on them, they get a bounty for that, similar to when they sell TVs that have hard-coded Netflix and Disney Plus buttons. They get X number of dollars to put those stickers on the remotes. I'm sure they're going to get some money back this way. So this will make financial sense for Samsung at the end of the day as well.
Yeah, you know, right now we have the cloud competition. We've got GeForce Now, we've got Stadia, there's Luna, Xbox Cloud Gaming. I don't know what these other ones are, Utomic, I've never heard of that one, but we've got a lot of choice when it comes to cloud gaming at this moment. And it would have been very easy for Samsung to be like, Bixby Gaming is your new thing, you know, and right. And like, they could have easily done that. I mean, maybe
it's 100% what I expected.
It's a pretty high, I mean, they could have done that, but I also think at the same time, it's a difficult hurdle to overcome to create a cloud gaming service that actually works. That's why you have companies that are very good at sending video, like Microsoft, Amazon, and Google, in that space already. The idea that Samsung said, you know what, we'll just have everybody's stuff in this thing, that's really awesome. And it also means that somebody's going to go out, they're going to buy a Samsung TV. They probably won't even think about this, because let's be honest, the people who know about this stuff are the nerds that like watch this show, or right, like us, like these kind of nerds will know this stuff. But most people, they don't know what Stadia is or whatever. But let's imagine for a second that they know what Stadia is, but they're not nerdy enough to watch our show. Okay. Mm-hmm. That kind of person might go to the store, buy a Samsung TV, plug it in, turn it on, and they're going to be like, oh, I can take all of this garbage that's plugged into the back of my TV and put it, you know, give it to my kids to play to use on our old TV, because that's what we all do. We all hand our stuff down to our kids.
Right.
It like, we downstairs, my son got a TV for Christmas, and that meant the PS5 got pulled out of the living room. Thank God, because that thing is hideous. I was so happy to get rid of it. And now, like, we've got our TV, and there's a table underneath the TV, and it's almost empty. And I'm like, as somebody who prefers things to be nice and neat and clean, like, I was so happy to get his Nintendo Switch, his, what was the Lego game that had the physical thing?
Dimensions.
Yeah. His Lego Dimensions thing off of that table, his PS5 off of that table, all that stuff is now not on that table anymore, and it's nice and clean. And I think that a lot of people would prefer to not have a bunch of wires hanging all over the place. So that's definitely a bonus with this thing. The second extra awesome bonus is that there's going to be people who are even less nerdy than the people that I was just talking about, and they're not going to know what Stadia is or GeForce or whatever. And they're going to turn this on, and they'll see the gaming hub, and they'll hit a button, and they'll be like, oh, Far Cry 6, that's the guy from Breaking Bad. I think I want to check that out. Needs a controller? Yeah. I've got a controller here in the house. Let me try it out. Like, that's going to be a very, very compelling thing. And they're not even going to those people will be like, I don't understand how my TV can do this.
Yeah.
But it's going to be awesome. Go ahead.
It's going to be huge, like Super Bowl time. You're going to have Madden ads
on the
Apple hub. Someone just watched Vikings on Netflix. Next thing you know, they pop into the game hub and they're like, oh, Valhalla, that looks interesting. Is this just like the show I watched? So there's a lot of like cross synergistic kind of things that can happen. But yeah, again, I'm honestly shocked that Samsung is going out on their own and not just not playing catch up, but they're actually kind of trailing a path here. And I really hope that stuff like this is common across all TVs and all streaming devices. Like if you have an Apple TV, there's no reason why something like this shouldn't exist other than Apple wants their...
Apple.
They want their pound of flesh every time someone buys a game, right? That's just not the reality anymore when you have a streaming service. So, be interesting to see how this all plays out. More TVs with Stadia built right in means more potential players on Stadia. Google will have Stadia in front of millions of eyeballs over the coming months just because of new TVs getting apps and Samsung TVs getting stuff like this. So it's pretty exciting for the future of cloud gaming.
Right. And the idea of cloud gaming, the ability for cloud gaming to sneak into people's lives is something that I think a lot of naysayers forget about. They forget about the fact that, well, I have to go and buy a device. Like right now, on most TVs, you have to go and buy a device if you want to do cloud gaming. You have to either buy a Shield TV Pro if you want to play on your TV, or you have to buy a Google TV or a Premiere Edition for Stadia. Like, you have to have a thing to decode that stream. But
right. As
TVs, like their internal hardware, as decoding 4K video becomes more trivialized, as chips get more and more powerful, the number of people who have access to devices that can do this, and maybe they're not even big gamers, but maybe they'll try it out because like we said before, they see Giancarlo Espinoza?
Esposito.
I've been watching Scrubs. Espinoza is the name of of Carla.
Right.
So they'll see him, and maybe that'll pull them into the game. And like you said, all of those that never occurred to me. Madden stuff around Super Bowl time. This time for the World Series, they're going to have, you know, the show. Play it on Xbox Cloud Gaming, because I think it's only there in PlayStation at this point. Like that kind of stuff is going to really broaden where cloud gaming is, and it's low effort for the cloud gaming platform manufacturers. They don't have to do anything really. They just got to wait for the TV manufacturers to make that happen. And it makes a lot of sense for TV manufacturers to want to make that happen. So I think I saw an article the other day that said that there were 100 million Android TVs already in the wild, which is just crazy to me.
Insane.
And that number is going to just keep going up. And speaking of which, TCL TV Global, which I don't know anything about these. I don't pay close attention to TV manufacturers. There's other people who do that. That's a different kind of nerd. but like they also... we'll be having the TCL Game Center, which is exactly the same thing that not Nvidia. What did I just say? Samsung just announced, and they said cloud gaming content, Google Stadia Ready, AMD FreeSync Premium, smartphone as a gaming controller. Don't do that; it's going to be terrible. But
it's not.
It like the other stuff is great, and we're going to see a lot more of this in 2022, 23, 24, and it's just going to be in every TV moving forward, I think. For a good long period of time.
100%. And again, this is a win for every cloud gamer out there, someone that is passionate about the industry. Any person playing cloud gaming is a good thing for the industry, whether they're playing Luna or Xbox or PlayStation Now or GeForce Now or Stadia, because it shows more people that, hey, this is a viable alternative. And then when Stadia makes a game or brings a game to the service that they want to play, it's as easy as clicking a link and buying the game and then jumping in and playing it. So this is good to see all this stuff pop up across the industry. It's going to be good for Stadia. It's going to be good for all cloud gaming services, which is something that I love because, hey, if you haven't heard, we love cloud gaming here on the show.
Yeah, I will say that I feel like Stadia, their business model is the best one for this particular inroad into houses, because, you know, it's somebody who's not really an active gamer, they're probably going to say, I'm not going to subscribe to Game Pass or Xbox Cloud Gaming. Somebody who is not really a mainstream gamer, they're probably not going to subscribe to GeForce Now. But somebody who is not really the mainstream gamer, they are going to, they might look at a game and say, oh, well, I can buy that for $20 and play it on my TV. I'll do that. That's a, like, it's a completely different ask because the subscription is optional. Whereas the, with the other ones, the subscription is kind of required. Now you might say, well, hold on, Bill, GeForce Now requires a subscription or does has a free tier. And yes, they do, but you have to get in line and you get kicked off after an hour. And most people are not going to use that. Like that tier, I think, is just for people who are mainstream gamers who want to play when they're not at home. Like that's a different use case, in my opinion. And you can feel free to disagree with me either in chat, which is over there, or in the comments, which is down there. All right.
Right.
Go ahead.
No, that's it. I'm excited for the next story because this is probably my favorite thing to have happened in December of 2021.
Talk about it.
This is a mind blowing thing for me, Bill. I was sitting on my bed. I was trying to get a couple games in on with my Backbone, which is a really cool controller for iOS things. You slide it open, you put your phone inside of it. It has hardware buttons. It's really great. I love it. And I was having no end of issues with my phone. And I'm like, why are all these services so terrible these days? I don't understand what's happening with the Wi-Fi network. Turns out it's my phone. My Wi-Fi on my phone is busted. And so I was sitting there with a Backbone that I really couldn't use until I get a new phone. So I tweeted Backbone saying, hey, what about a mode where I can just use my phone version sitting in a Backbone to play games that are on my iPad? This would be amazing. And then someone replied to me immediately saying, well, they just announced that at the end of October. So I tweeted this at like mid-November or whatever. They're like, yeah, at the end of October, they announced it. And I'm like, what? So I looked into it and Backbone announced a service called Backbone Plus. If you had bought a Backbone prior to October 22nd, you're immediately enrolled as long as you've like signed up for an account and have used it. You're immediately enrolled in that service. And basically what Backbone Plus allows you to do is a bunch of different new screen recordings, some other stuff. Nothing super exciting for me personally. But they also added another mode where you can actually use the Lightning port on the Backbone controller, get a Lightning to USB-C control or a cable, and you can plug your Backbone into your computer or your tablets or your laptop or whatever. You go into the settings mode and you can say that I'm going to be connecting this Backbone to a phone, an iPad, or a MacBook. It puts it into different controller modes, and then as soon as you plug it in without a phone in it, it becomes an actual controller, that a wired controller, of course, that you can use for playing games. So immediately after that happened, I fired up Stadia on my iPad, plugged in my Backbone controller into my iPad, and I had no problems. And that's how I determined that my Wi-Fi issue was actually my phone is just old and needs to be replaced, but it's a work phone and I have to wait for that to happen. But I can now use my Backbone all the time, and I've done it on my M1 Mac, I've done it on my iPad, I've done it on a bunch of different devices, and it works so well. So while this isn't a huge thing for a lot of people because people are buying the Backbone to put their phone into it, for me, someone that could no longer use their phone and was looking at a $100 device that is going to sit in a cupboard until I get a new phone, I can now use it to do cloud gaming across my other devices, which I really love. So if you have a Backbone, you can now connect it to iPads and PCs and Macs with no problems. If you don't have a Backbone, getting one, this has just increased the utility of that device, mm-hmm. and maybe we'll generate a bunch of sales for that company as well.
Yeah, I don't have the Backbone. I have the GameSir, and this was sent as like a review unit. So like I didn't pay for this, but they don't get to tell me what to say. I really, really like this thing for every kind of game except for shooters. Anything where I have to do aiming with the right stick, I can't stand that it's down here. And I feel like they tried to copy the Nintendo Switch. They tried to copy the Nintendo Switch with this thing. And the reason that they did that is so that when I take off the controller,
right,
it's, and we talked about this on
deck.
on deck yesterday, which is coming out tomorrow. They did it so that when I put this controller this way and this controller this way, they match. Like, they do the same thing. But that's not what this thing does. So the whole idea that they put the stick on the bottom means that when I play it, I have very little to hold on to. And so it's very uncomfortable and it's hard to actually hit my shots. Whereas if it were up here where the buttons are, it would have been better. I looked at the backbone. It has that same design. How do you feel? Like, I love this thing for any game that's where I don't have to aim. It's great. Games where I have to aim, it's terrible. How do you feel about the backbone in that case?
The controls on the backbone, even though they're like kind of short throw analog sticks, because this is something that you throw in your backpack and stuff like that. So yeah, it's not gonna stick up as high as, say, an Xbox controller. I love it. I love the controls of my backbone. The only thing that I don't love is the L2 and R2 trigger seem a little bit kind of a mushy a little bit. But I think that's done because of, again, it's going to be rattling around in a lot of people's backpacks and they don't want to have actual switches that can wear out just because of like vibration and stuff like that. I have zero problems with the controller as a whole, though. And my favorite part about it is if you look at the screenshot that Bill showed, it has pink on this side or pink on this side and blue on this side, just like me. So they even have the same aesthetic as I do, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that's funny. The other thing about the game, sir, that I didn't think about this is that it doesn't have analog triggers. And because they're not analog, it's a digital trigger, which means you're either pulling or you're not pulling, which means for a game like, say, Forza or something, you're either always hitting the gas or you're not. And I'm used to like kart racers where you're always hitting the gas. And when you're playing a game that's requires a little more deft control, then definitely don't want something with digital triggers. Does the backbone have analog triggers or digital triggers?
Analog.
Okay, well, there you go. It seems like the backbone is probably the better deal. I also like the way it looks more. Look at that D-pad. That D-pad looks exactly like a Stadia D-pad.
And it's really good. The D-pad works really, really well. My only issue with playing it separate from a phone, because you can't connect it to your iPad with a phone in it for stability, because as soon as that lightning connector on the right side of the backbone is connected to a phone, it goes into a different mode. It seems a little flimsy. I've been like contemplating like 3D printing some sort of like phone blank that I can stick in there to give a little bit more a more firmness when I'm playing the game. But man, what a great addition to obviously a premium add-on to a lot of people's gaming and a device that a lot of people won't even want. For me, this was just it came at the right time. I tweeted them, immediately got a reply back from someone else saying they just did that, dummy. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know. I guess I don't I don't have news feeds for all of the device accessories that I buy, so I can find out when new updates come. But yeah, the Backbone Plus changes and that new external control mode, I can't remember what Backbone calls it, has been such a great thing.
That's awesome. All right, we're going to have to lightning round the rest of this because we're already been going for an hour. But hey, that's what happens when we take some time off. We have a lot to say. The next thing is, like, there's this article over at 9to5 Google about the fact that the Stadia Makers program is still going, but I was reading through it, and the developer that made Grime and what was the other game that they made? I forget now. It doesn't matter. They made multiple games for Google Stadia using the Stadia Makers program. That's not really why I cared about this article. What I cared about was this quote that they said, and there you go. I see the games that they made. Here's what they had to say. After being accepted into the Makers program, we worked to launch two of our titles into Stadia Pro, Grime and the Dark Side Detective. Despite being polar opposites in terms of content and genre, both performed well in terms of finances and player reception. Stadia Pro seems to benefit a wide variety of titles, regardless of style or replayability. Here's why I wanted to bring this up. Previously, we had when Google made an announcement that they were changing how Stadia Pro works for developers in order to give them more money. They like there was a lot of speculation about the only games that would do well on that kind of deal, that kind of contract, would be games where you either have extremely long games that you like Assassin's Creed Valhalla, where you'd be playing that game for a million years, or the games that are infinitely replayable, like say like a battle royale or those mindless shooters that I love so much, like those kind of games. But like Darkside Detective and Grime are neither of those. And the fact that this dev is saying, hey, the new Stadia Pro deal is good for us, it shows me, obviously this could be an outlier, but it shows me that the things that you and I were suspecting about Stadia Pro and that devs would like it, that's kind of the polar opposite of what the common wisdom is out there, where people are constantly saying nobody plays Stadia, nobody's making games for Stadia because it doesn't have, you know, because the audience is too small. Well, clearly these devs are happy with how it's going. What's your reaction to this quote?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great. More developers talking like this is going to convince other developers or other publishers to get in on the deal. So that's going to be good for us. I guess the big thing was there was all the reports that Stadia Makers was completely shut down and Google's not funding anything anymore. And obviously that is not entirely the case. Some of the details from the original Makers to what it is now has changed, obviously. What this really just stinks of is we don't know because Google's not telling us. Mm-hmm. And if Google wants to clear all this stuff up, they need to do a Connect. They need to have a press conference. They need to release more information on this stuff. Because there's a lot of there's a lot of ideas in the community that are vastly different than reality, but no one is stopping saying those things because the leaders of the product that they're talking about aren't coming out and saying anything either. So hopefully we'll get more news about Stadia Makers, maybe around like GDC or whatever. Maybe we'll find out more about what the new Makers program is going to look like and what the new pro deals are doing and all these happy developers about jumping into the new pro deal, signing the different contract or the new contract or whatever it has to be, because we need info. We need stuff. We need concrete information so that we can squash some of the falsehoods that are going on around the community, and it really isn't on us to do that. No. It's really on Google to do that. So yes. Hopefully Google can get to work on making that happen.
Yeah, I feel like I probably praised Google's decision to shut up. Like before, they were over promising and under delivering, and I think that 99% of that was because of the pandemic. But then they said, you know what, we're done talking about things because it only ever comes back and bites us in the rear. And at the time, I probably said, you know what, that's probably the right move. Just keep your mouth shut, put your head down, and keep working. Mm-hmm. But they also, like, they don't need to tell people what's coming, but they should tell people what's happening. And they should tell people, like, hey, like, I think GeForce Now, they had posted a thing where they were like, hey, everybody, this is how many users we have.
Yeah.
That, you know, Google should do that, too. They should say, this is how many people have played games. This is how many hours of gameplay have happened on Stadia since we launched or in the last month or whatever numbers. That's the kind of information that they should be talking about. Don't necessarily mention what's coming, because we all know that when you mention what's coming, people generate their own expectations, and when you don't meet the expectations that people came up with on their own, they get mad at you. That's a bad idea. But talk about what's happening. And it, like, the whole idea of a Stadia Connect, how long has it been? Two, like a year? Maybe I don't know.
Yeah. It's a long time. I can't even remember when the last one is. And yeah, like the Kinect doesn't have to be, as you said, Bill, promising future additions. Just talk about what you've done recently. Talk about new games coming. Have developers on to talk about how amazing I don't know, making Assassin's Creed Valhalla run buttery smooth on Stadia was, and here's what we did, and check out this feature that can only ever be done in the cloud. Stuff like that is good for the industry as a whole, but it's also good for Stadia as a platform. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that stuff can come back this year, because I think it's sorely needed.
Absolutely. All right, lightning rounding these last two things. There was a developer who they said that they were working at Ubisoft, and they were working on an unannounced AAA game as a contractor for Ubisoft. And one of those tasks was porting to Stadia. The only reason I bring this up is because, hey, I'm not surprised at all. I don't think anybody's surprised that a Ubisoft game is coming to Stadia. Ubisoft seems to understand that when more people can play their games, they make more money. Not a huge shocker, but I had people send it to me, so I figured I would include it. And then the other thing is that Google is hiring a product lead for infrastructure and partner experience at Stadia. I don't have anything really to say about that. It's great that they are still hiring people, but that doesn't mean that they're trying to expand. They could just be replacing somebody that recently moved on to another job or got promoted or something. But I thought it was interesting, and I wanted to mention it to people. Any thoughts on either of those two stories, Lloyd?
That the fact that that job is posted is really great. But if you look at some of the other jobs that are available with the Stadia group, there's software development manager for Stadia porting, technical developer for tools for Stadia, program manager, strategy and operations, engineering. There's so many different jobs that are posted right now, or that are up posting, whether they're going to hire for them soon or not, we don't know. For Stadia, that is not something you do if the platform is dead. So maybe that whole, I don't know, thread can just drop across the internet, because it's obvious that Stadia is not dead. They wouldn't be hiring managers and VPs and engineers for a service that isn't going to continue. Whether it's going to continue in the same form that we have right now, you never know, because businesses pivot. But let's stop that. That whole Stadia is dead, I don't know, communication or thread that is happening on Twitter. Let's not dip into that, and let's just focus on the future. And hopefully we'll get news from Stadia to give us that future news.
That's right. That's it for this episode of StadiaCast. I'm Bill. That's Lloyd. Lloyd, tell everybody goodbye.
Take it easy, everybody. It's been nice talking to you after a few weeks. We'll see you here next Sunday on StadiaCast. Have a good one, everybody.